The Guardian.
Last week, we did our first extra Science Weekly episode on the COVID-19 outbreak, and your response has been phenomenal. We'd like to thank so many of you for getting in touch and sending us your questions. We won't be able to explore everything, but we will try to address as much as we can within the bounds of what is actually known about the outbreak at present. Please do continue to get in touch by emailing us, scienceweekly@theguardian.com. Last week, we looked at where in the body the coronavirus infects us, and this week, we'll look at what happens once it does. There's still a lot we don't know about exactly how this works, but as we'll hear today, insights into other kinds of infections could help us.
So one thing over the past century since the severe flu outbreak in 1918, research has given us a network of scientists globally that are able to respond rapidly to epidemics such as the coronavirus.
I'm Nicola Davis, and welcome to another special edition of Science Weekly Extra.
Hello?
Hello, hi, is that James?
Hi, yes it is.
This is Professor James Stewart.
I'm Professor of Molecular Virology here at the University of Liverpool.
That's perfect. Lovely. Thank you very much indeed. Obviously, the coronavirus is a new virus and there's a lot that we don't know. But you look at influenza, which we know quite a lot about. How similar are the two?
So the new coronavirus and influenza virus are both RNA viruses, which means that their genetic code, their genome, is made out of RNA. And they both have a membrane around them that has proteins in it. So their biology is roughly comparable.
It seems that the way they infect is also similar. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Influenza and the new coronavirus both infect epithelial cells in the lung lining and the respiratory tract and cause, I guess, a similar kind of disease.
So what happens when that infection takes place? What's happening in the cells? And then I suppose we call them symptoms, but what's happening in the body?
The infected cells themselves actually sense the virus infection using proteins that are called pattern recognition receptors, or PRRs for short. These PRRs then trigger the production of proteins called interferons and cytokines that have two main effects. Firstly, these proteins establish an antiviral state in surrounding cells that are uninfected, and this has the effect of actually slowing down the virus infection. The second thing that these cytokines do is that they go outside the lung and attract in cells, inflammatory cells, such as neutrophils, macrophages, and natural killer cells. And these inflammatory cells help to kill and mop up the virally infected cells.
So this process happens whether we're looking at flu or whether we're looking at coronavirus, is that right?
So the process I've described will happen in most virus infections, and yes, you're right, whether we're talking about flu or whether we're talking about coronavirus.
And in terms of the sort of symptoms that sort of attack will produce, what are we talking about here?
In the early stages, you're going to get, because interferons and cytokines circulate around the body, you're going to get the symptoms of headache, muscle ache. And because cells are being attacked by the virus and you're getting inflammation, you're going to get the cough. And if you get more severe infection, you can get excessive cytokine production, excessive inflammation, and you get destruction of lung tissue resulting from that, which can lead to the shortness of breath.
And what determines whether people recover or not, or how severe an infection is?
So during less severe infections, virus replication is controlled by the body's antiviral response that I've just described. And then as the infection progresses and the virus replication decreases, you get negative feedback loops that kick in. And these decrease the cytokine production, inflammation, and actually promote lung healing. However, in some people who have, for one reason or another, decreased immunity, There's a failure to control this initial virus replication, and this leads on to an uncontrolled cytokine production, sometimes called a cytokine storm, and this in turn leads to excessive inflammation, which causes severe damage to the lungs and can cause a failure to recover. And actually what can happen is that the air sacs, or the alveoli as they're called, can actually become filled with fluid. And as a result of this, the level of oxygen in the bloodstream can decrease. You get shortness of breath. And this is often called acute respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS.
Pneumonia is one of the conditions that's been talked about a lot in relation to COVID-19. Does the coronavirus actually cause pneumonia?
So the initial coronavirus infection occurs in, as I said, in the air sacs or alveoli. And this causes inflammation and damage, and will cause the symptoms of viral pneumonia, including the fever, the cough, and shortness of breath. However, where you get more severe infection, you get lung damage, which will actually lead to a secondary pneumonia that is frequently caused by bacteria. And that kind of causes an amplification of the symptoms, which become worse in the pneumonia. Gets worse.
So on that, some of our listeners have gotten in touch and asked us about the pneumonia vaccine. Now, I know that vaccine is against bacterial pneumonia, not viral pneumonia, but is it worth people considering getting it if they're eligible anyway?
I think I would always advise people who are eligible to get vaccinations for other respiratory diseases. You've talked about bacterial pneumonia and also influenza, because that's going to help you if you do get infected. You're unfortunate enough to get infected by the coronavirus. It's sensible that you don't have any co-infections with other bacteria and viruses. So if it's indicated, I would always recommend getting your vaccine.
And are there other organs or systems that are affected? We've talked a lot here about the lungs, but are there other parts of the body that are affected by this immune response?
So in the terms of coronavirus, research so far has not indicated that there are is significant infection outside the lung in other organs, like there can be with other viruses. However, in patients that get the severe disease that I've talked about, there's actually a drop in oxygen levels in the blood, and then there can be leakage of the cytokines and inflammatory cells that I've talked about from the lungs around the body, carried by the lymph and blood system. And this can lead to inflammation and complications in other organs. And if it's severe enough, this can lead to multiple organ system failure.
Can insights into other viral infections like influenza help us when we're tackling the coronavirus?
So one thing over the past century since the severe flu outbreak in 1918, research has given us a network of scientists globally that are able to respond rapidly to epidemics such as the coronavirus, and in turn rapidly develop novel therapies. So it's also given us along the way libraries of compounds that will lead to the rapid development of antiviral drugs, and also technologies and platforms that will enable rapid development of a vaccine to combat the coronavirus.
Perfect. Thank you so much, James. I think that covers absolutely everything. Really lovely. Thank you. Pretty much a one take hit that. We're very impressed. So thank you very much for your time and for dealing with those extra questions I chucked at you. I appreciate that.
Thanks to James Stewart for joining me this week. We'd love to hear any more scientific questions you may have on the virus, as well as any thoughts on this week's episode. Be sure to send us an email, scienceweekly@theguardian.com. Our sister podcast, Today in Focus, is doing some fantastic coverage of some of the wider issues associated with the COVID-19 outbreak, including a recent episode on the situation in Italy. Just search Today in Focus wherever you get your podcasts.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.